D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. A reminder, week four of Silly Underdog Picks gets underway at 5:20. As always, we will need one of you to represent the people. At that time, you can call us 615-737-1025. And if you represent the people and you pick correctly, you will win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach and Rise Against at First Bank Amphitheater on Wednesday, October 1st. So if you want those tickets, be listening in the third hour for the cue to call to represent the people in Silly Underdog Picks. But that is at 5:20. In the meantime, we are discussing a review of the Rams game from Blake Bedingfield, former college scout for the Tennessee Titans. He writes weekly reviews of Titans games for PaulKuharsky.com. And buried at the bottom of his latest review, he talks about how this is a rebuilding year for the Titans and that the Titans must trade assets while they are healthy and playing at a level that has value. He says, quote, I trade L'Jarius Sneed, Jeffrey Simmons, and Calvin Ridley. I also look to shop Tyler Lockett, Arden Key, Draymond Jones, Sebastian Joseph Day, and Kevin Zeitler. The trade deadline isn't until November 4th. Got tripped over my own tongue there. The good news is that the Titans have young players who can fill in, so on and so forth. So here is the question we have for all of you at 615-737-1025. Blake Bedingfield is basically suggesting that the Titans go full on fire sale. Do you agree with that? And how would you rank the players he mentioned in terms of value? Let's go to Trey, who's been waiting patiently on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Trey, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Trey.
Hey, I would say, really, I would do it right now. If they get up to 8 games and they haven't won a game, I would do it. I would do it this season. Because right now, they have a little bit of value. But, you know, their record is what, at 20% over 2 years, they won, what, about 20% of their game? So their value is at 20%. I would say Jeffrey Simmons, he probably, you know, would be a mid-third or late fourth, but he really worth a 24-pack. And the other guys, man, Kevin Ridley, he haven't performed well. Tony Pollard, he hasn't performed well. And I just think, you know, just blow the whole thing up, get a new coach, let's reset and do something different. Y'all have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks, Trey. So during the break, I wanted to get a sense of what Calvin Ridley's value could be in a trade, because I don't have as firm of a grip on trade value in the NFL as I do in the NHL. If we're talking about Predators players who are on the trade block, I can tell you confidently what those players are probably worth. But there were three recent receiver trades that I pulled up. And I want Willie and Derek to tell me where you would slot Calvin Ridley in this pecking order. DK Metcalf traded from the Seahawks to the Steelers. DK Metcalf netted the Seahawks a second-round pick. George Pickens traded from the Steelers to the Cowboys. He landed the Steelers a third-round pick. Deebo Samuel, being traded from the Niners to the Commanders, landed San Francisco a fifth-round pick. So a second-round pick for Metcalf, a third-round pick for Pickens, and a fifth-round pick for Samuel. Where would you put Ridley in that pecking order?
I would say he would be between Samuel and Pickens. I think
so. A fourth round pick for Calvin Ridley.
A fourth round pick for Calvin Ridley, depending on how his season is going. I think he's still, because we look at the first two games and we say, well, he's not going to reach that mark that we had for him.
1,100 yards.
But his season started off like this last year, and he still was able to get to that, you know, over 1,000 yards, close to 1,100 yards, if not 1,100 yards. So I still believe he will get that. His value goes up the more big plays he make. He's one of those guys that he has the ability to make the big play, but he also lacks concentration at times to make the simple catches. And if he continues to make those plays, you know, down the field, then there's going to be a team, again, eighth week of the season, eighth game, ninth week of the season, whatever it is, the trade deadline, there's going to be a team, just like there's going to be a team looking for a defensive tackle. When that time come around, there's going to be a team looking for a wide receiver. And depending on who that team is, that depends on, and how desperate they are, that depends on how much you can probably get for Calvin Ridley. So it's hard to say, oh, you will only, like, you will definitely get a second round or third round. If you're telling me to pick between those guys, I think he's more of a fourth round pick you have to give up.
I'm not enough of a expert of how tradable a contract is. Mm-hmm. Calvin Ridley still has 2 years on his deal, and his cap hit the next couple of years is about $26.5 mm-hmm. million, 27. But on the spot rack, it says potential out before 26. Next year,
yeah.
$16 million dead cap hit. But if I'm a – so it's not really a rental for the team that's getting – they've still got to deal with the dead cap money. Mm-hmm. So just on first glance, that would indicate to me that that devalues what you would trade, unlike somebody who's like, let's take Lockett, who hasn't done anything, mm-hmm. but he's a veteran guy and he's on a 1 year deal. So as a rental, you might throw them a draft pick. He's not worth what Ridley's worth in a vacuum. But when you consider the contract, you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Lockett's contract is a lot more easy to trade. So I don't know how you get around Ridley's contract.
Benjamin on our text line mentions you have to account that DK and Debo got new contracts.
Yes, and that's
right.
What
that's
said
why
off
that's
air.
What gets yeah. trades going in a lot of cases.
Exactly.
That is fair, Benjamin. Let's go to Stryker on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Stryker, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Let's just look at the fundamentals. The team has not had a history of exemplary drafts. So if you fill the bucket with draft capital and presume that in rebuilding, you're going to have a team that's going to mesmerize people and fill seats in the new stadium. History tends to repeat itself, and I would ask, what confidence does anybody have that with a bucket full of draft capital, the Titans can rebuild in a short term with exemplary players?
Okay.
And I'll hang up.
Well, but before you hang up, are you still with us?
Yes.
What is your alternative? There's only two ways to build a roster. That's drafting and free agency or trades, right? So how if you're not, you don't want the picks, so how do you build a roster?
I think you build the roster with what you have, and you have the very best coaching that you can have, and you have people that play team football.
But you just got done telling us, and you're correct, that the recent history of their draft, they don't what they have isn't good enough right now. We agree on
well,
that, right?
I would say that there is more potential there than has been demonstrated. And to start swapping out the chairs on the Titanic challenge.
Thank you for the call.
There is a new guy making picks is what I would make the case.
Well, you
can't just say because the last couple of guys have had some bad drafts that the next few drafts you don't have a belief can be better.
No, but you're right, but we've been saying this for months now. It's not that people don't trust the team. They don't trust who runs the team. That's what it is. And that caller was a prime example. He thinks there's talent, but he don't trust the people that are in place to develop it and to go out and get more. He don't trust them. So he would rather let's try to develop what we already got, which is, I don't agree with them. I don't agree with them on that because they don't have much. So it's not much you can develop outside of the last two drafts because the drafts before that, they are who they are.
It's a vicious cycle, right?
Yeah.
Right now, it's like that, you know, the whirlwind where you're going down the
That's
toilet,
why the quarterback
right?
has to hit. That's why the quarterback right. has to hit.
And the question
in a very tough environment.
Yes.
And the question that a lot of texters have, I'm going to single out Robert here because his is the text that's in front of me. But Robert is speaking for a lot of people in the text line. So leave Cam with no one, not only a bad idea, but I don't get trading all of the good players. I don't think trading all of the good players we have would make him very happy. He also doesn't like playing on the turf. That's a separate issue. But that point is well taken because there is an important there is an importance of having a solid infrastructure around your young quarterback. And part of the, let's call it what it is, tanking process is moving on from unnecessary veterans, but you have to try to retain enough of an infrastructure to evaluate right. the young talent on the roster.
And to Benningfield's credit, he says for some of the players he's nominating, and I would say, again, when is the last time you saw a team trade more than two or three guys mm-hmm. at the deadline? It just does not happen. It's not like baseball or hockey where you do see that from time to time. You don't have that. But Benningfield is saying, okay, I trade X, I've got Y, Z, A, you know, three guys ready to step in, at least provide some. There's a reason why you would trade Snead, because you've got some young defensive backs, et cetera, right? But you trade three guys? Those guys aren't great players anyway, to me, but they are maybe the best that you have, and you need those draft picks more than you need those players, is what I think.
And it's a double-edged sword, right? Because as we have discussed, when it comes to rebuilding teams, I am on team play the kids, which is give the young players as much opportunity as they can, basically sink or swim. Now, I had this same conversation about the Nashville Predators last season, and Barry Trotz would come on this station every week and talk about how that sort of idea promotes a losing culture, and it's hard to get that stink off of your organization once it bakes in there. The key example in the NHL is the Buffalo Sabres, right? The Buffalo Sabres have missed the postseason, I want to say 15 years in a row, and they've done this. They've played the kids. They've had top draft picks, and no matter what they do, they can't figure it out. So that is the double-edged sword. You can trade Jeffrey Simmons. You can trade Calvin Ridley. Legarius needs some combination. Tyler Lockett, Arden Key. And you can put in Chim Dike and other young players to fill those respective roles. But you're putting Cam Ward in an incredibly tough situation. So the question is, we mentioned Calvin Ridley. Let's just say Calvin Ridley's worth a fourth-round pick. What's more valuable to the Tennessee Titans? Having a fourth-round pick that they can use to help replenish the roster, or Calvin Ridley to catch passes from Cam Ward so that Cam Ward isn't throwing passes to untested rookies as he tries to develop?
Well, that's a no-brainer. You keep Calvin Ridley because everything, all this is predicated on the quarterback. Everything is geared toward the quarterback. Everything that they hopefully are doing is to help this quarterback become the best player that he can possibly be, because obviously they think he's the guy. So if that is the case, then you need to do everything within your power to help him, not hamper him. So taking away his number one option when you haven't been able to develop a number two option, that's not helping. That's hurting. They were able to trade Hop last year. Why? Because they, in their mind, they had a number one in Calvin Ridley. So we can trade Hop, still have our number one, and let those other guys kind of fit in where they get in. And they did. It was all right. It wasn't nothing great. It was manageable at times. But we know what were the causes of the Titans' demise last year. Majority of it was the offensive line. But you can't – I don't think we can sit here and say we want the quarterback to develop and we want this quarterback to be the guy that we believe he can be. And then on the other hand, said we're taking away weapons from him. These are some critical times for this quarterback, Cam Ward. This time is critical for him. In his development, he needs as many guys that he can depend on offense. Defense is a different animal. But on offense, he needs as many people as he can possibly have that he can depend on. And sometimes you may just have to suffer through that purgatory of a season when it comes to your roster just to make sure that your quarterback stays on task. Because if you get rid of his number one, they haven't developed a two or a three yet. Now, there are people already didn't want Vance Jefferson on the team. You get rid of Calvin Ridley, Vance Jefferson goes from being your three or four to your two now.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful.
And then there's next year.
Yeah.
Like you're going to maybe you draft a receiver with a high first round mm-hmm. pick, and you still need edge rushers. You still need all of these other things. But
I'm not
saying
don't trade. I'm just saying be careful about the guys on offense that you're trading.
I agree. Ridley is very debatable. I think I think Simmons, because he's got the value that I think he's got, while he's healthy, I think you have to shop him. If you can get Snead playing 5-6 weeks of pretty good football, and he had some very good reps against Devontae Adams, that was encouraging to me. That's why I was concerned that they pushed the envelope and tried on a really hot day where he has not played a full game in a long time. They pushed it, and now I hear he's got a back ailment. I didn't like hearing that. But if he can play 5 or 6 weeks, I think you get a chance to offload him and get something.
Who's going
to
take that contract?
Well,
who's going
to
take it?
Let's take a look at the contract.
On a guy that needs to be managed.
A team trying to win this year.
That's still tough. It depends on what he still has left on his contract. This is only the second year into a four-year deal?
Well, let's see. He's got a dead cap hit of 8.1 mm-hmm. at the end of this year. Mm-hmm. There's 2 years left, $20 million on each year. Mm-hmm. So could you live with that if you're trying to win and you keep him maybe for one more year after that? I don't know.
Like, it's just going to be hard to trade that. Yeah,
because of his
injury history.
Remember how hard it is to find
yeah.
corners that can help you win.
And his injury history. So you're asking the team to take the contract and the history of injury. Exactly.
And that's why they're probably not going to offer you
much.
What you hope.
Yeah.
My thought is that the Titans should trade any player who can get them a top 100 pick. The Titans have a stated goal of acquiring a certain amount of top 100 picks. I can't recall the precise number off the top of my head. I will look it up during the break. But my thought would be trade any player who can get you a top 100 pick. So if that only player is Jeffrey Simmons, then it's Jeffrey Simmons. So I understand the listener's point that if you just trade everybody, then Cam Ward is going to be swimming upstream with a bunch of untested receivers and pass rushers who don't actually get to the quarterback and cornerbacks who commit tons of penalties all of the time. And it's not a good situation for Cam Ward. You don't want to put Cam Ward in that sort of situation. So I get that. But let's get to your reaction coming up next. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A ton of reaction. We will get to it next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. That's the good stuff. I heard this song on my way to taking my son to school today, and I made him sit in the car outside the school before I took him in because
good
I had
him.
To hear this song.
Exactly. Get him used to some good music. Good for him.
Would we consider MC Scat Cat good music?
For kids, yeah, it is. For him, right now.
The song has more of an adult message.
Guess, yeah. He don't know.
Opposites attract?
Well, you know, this cartoon cat is like all up on Paula Abdul.
Yeah, you got a point.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All up in her business.
That is true.
You know?
That is true.
Yeah.
But we are talking.
Brings back memories.
It does.
Yes.
It does.
That was a big album.
We are talking Titans, and Blake Bedingfield on PaulGaharsky.com is part of his scouting review of the Titans' loss to the Rams, suggesting, basically, that the Titans go full-on fire sale. He writes, quote, "My focus going forward would be to trade players that won't be producers when Ward hits his prime. That is 2 years away. I trade L'Jarius Sneed, Jeffrey Simmons, and Calvin Ridley. I also look to shop Tyler Lockett, Arden Key, Draymond Jones, Sebastian Joseph Day, and Kevin Zeitler." So my question to all of you, would you support Blake Bedingfield's position if the Titans were to undertake a full-on fire sale? 615-737-1025. A lot of texts. I will try to get to as many as I can. One texter says, "I just think it's crazy to think about trading our best players after 2 weeks that no one even thought we would have a chance. So stupid. When the Preds were like 23-4, everybody was like, let's wait until Thanksgiving. I'm telling you, a win this week changes everything."
Well, it's hard to do this. Very few trades happen this early in the season. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the process of having the mindset of checking the market. It doesn't mean you have to trade all these guys, right? Just because you say, let's look to trade them, it doesn't mean you're going to find the right deal. But I think you have to have a mindset of exploring the market and seeing what's out there. And you have until November 4th. Obviously, if they ripped off four straight wins, that would change their mind. I don't think anybody's really ready to make a trade right now. But, for example, KC, right? They've got some – they're 0-2.
Mm-hmm. Just like you.
And
who would have ever thought?
They have a suspended wide receiver, and they have an injured wide receiver. Did they have trouble moving the ball against the Eagles? You better believe they did. They got a problem at wide receiver until they get those guys back. So that's the kind of thing that you should be exploring, right? And I don't know if it's Ridley. Maybe they take anybody. You know, but that's why you call and you're in a rebuild mode. You're seeing what the market looks like. How do I improve my team in the long haul?
Derek, I think my stance on this is, as I said before the break, if a team is willing to offer you a top 100 pick, and I failed my own homework assignment by not looking up the quote from, I believe it was Chad Brinker. If a team is willing to offer you a top 100 pick for a player of yours, you take it. Outside of that, I think it would be more valuable to have those players for Cam Ward. So, for example, Tyler Lockett. He's on the one-year deal, correct? Hasn't done much in two games, but a battle-tested veteran, I'm sure has a lot of respect around the NFL. If a team called you and said, we'll give you a sixth-round pick for Tyler Lockett, I would say no. Because, one, what are the chances that that sixth-round pick turns out to be an impact player? And two, I would rather have Tyler Lockett around my young quarterback. So if you're buying low, or if you're attempting to buy low on one of my players, I would rather keep that player for the premise of helping Cam Ward. But if a team is willing to buy high on a player, that's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird to talk about right now because we're only 2 weeks into the season, going on 3 weeks. So to talk about, you know, this team and try to destruct this, I mean, try to destruct.
Deconstruct.
Deconstruct, yes. I missed a part in there. Deconstruct this team this early. Man, I think this team isn't good, but I think this is putting the cart before the horse. We're only 2 weeks in to the season. I understand that this team, you know, if you're talking about the talent from top to bottom, this is not a good team from top to bottom. But you got a lot of young guys playing. Those veteran guys got to step up their game, but you got a lot of young guys playing. So you got to let these guys develop and see what they're going to be before you start thinking about trading your veteran guys. Again, I go back to, you don't know what Elik Aiemanner is going to be. You don't know what DK is going to be. They've shown flashes, yes. But you don't know if you trade Calvin Ridley in week 5 that it just won't go off the cliff after that. Because newsflash, people, there's this thing called a rookie wall that all rookies hit. No matter who you are, you hit it some form of fashion. And when that rookie hits the wall and you depend on him, it's not good. So let them get through the season a little bit more before, like, we put the cart before the horse in regards to trading. I know that's going to come. It's going to be there. I get it. But to talk, I mean, we got to talk about it, and it's a good conversation. But it's like it's too early for me to say, well, they need to trade Ridley. They need to trade Snead. They need to, maybe they can get this for him and get that for him, that. What if for whatever reason, and the texter was right, it only takes 1 week. They win this week against the best team in the South right now, the AFC South, the Indianapolis Colts, who's 2-0. You win a division game. Division game is worth two games. You win a division game. This is a whole new ball game now, people. It is. It's a whole new ball game if you beat the Indianapolis Colts. Now you are, guess what? Number one in the division. Why? Because you've won a division game. So let's wait. And I'm not saying that it's going to change and they're going to be the best team in the division, but at least give it a chance, a second, before you start, especially the guys on offense, because that's what's going to truly affect Cam Ward. You trade Jeffrey Simmons, yeah, it'll affect Cam Ward, but not to a point where it's going to hurt him in his development. But if you trade Calvin Ridley right now or another week, that is going to hurt the young kid because those other guys have not shown that they can consistently go out there and get the job done. Let them show it first. Iomanner started off on the right foot, but what happened to letting people prove it? What happened to that? Like, letting guys prove before you start anointing them that guy. Let them prove it. Like, let the young guy, Iomanner, prove that if you do trade away Ridley, that would be the best thing for the quarterback, not necessarily in the team, I guess.
But this is really a conversation for what do you do as the calendar starts to get to November.
Yes.
Nobody's going to do anything now. I don't think. You shouldn't. But I think as you get towards November, this is the mindset. I think Benningfield is setting the table in my mind. I'm not advocating for trading half of your roster right now. When have you ever in the NFL history seen that many trades this early in the season? It's not going to happen. You realistically could trade about two or three guys.
Maybe even two. Just two, really.
Grab three or four more picks. If you trade Simmons, hopefully, you would get more than one pick. And then that's what you would do around November.
Yeah, I mean, again, a lot of this is predicated on whether they win, continue to, if they play better and they win, then if they win, they're not going to be looking to trade a lot, like key guys. They're not going to be looking to trade key guys unless it benefits them right now.
But therein lies the rub. Let's just play it out the way, let's be as optimistic as we can.
Okay.
So let's say the Tennessee Titans defeat the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday and improve to 1-2. And they go to Houston, and Houston's struggling. And they win that game, and they're 2-2. And, maybe they split with the Cardinals and Raiders, and they're 3-3. And then they come back home, and they beat Mike Vrabel, and they're 4-3 on the season. So I know, Derek, you played this game. I cannot relate to what it's like being in the locker room when things are going well. You have to be realistic. Even at, let's just say, in my sunny side up, glass half full scenario, the Titans are 4-3 after 7 weeks. I don't think that's going to happen, but let's just say they are. You still have to be realistic about where this team is. So even if the Titans were to miraculously win the AFC South and guarantee themselves a playoff spot, they are not a contender in the AFC. So, it's easy for me, as someone who has never been in an NFL locker room, to say it doesn't matter if the Titans exceed expectations. They need to be realistic about what kind of team they are, and they still need to trade assets. It's easy for me to say that. It's a totally different thing, as Derek knows, for the players in the locker room. Hey, we're 4-3. We've already exceeded our win total from last season. We're playing great. Now you're going to trade our players away? It's a delicate balance that the Titans front office would have to tap dance around in that
situation. The only way they would trade an individual, if they're 4-3 after 7 games, 8 weeks, if they're 4-3, I'm not sure they're looking to trade anybody unless it brings back immediate dividends. Like, we're 4-3. We've already won a division game. We feel we got something here. We need something else. Oh, we need that. Okay, I will trade away this guy. But outside of that, if you're 4-3, why are you looking to mess with it? Why are you looking to do anything really outside of, if somebody comes to you and say, we want one of your big time. Well, really, it goes up even more now because I'm in a position I'm in a position to win my division early on. I'm at the top early on right now. I'm 4-3, won the division game. I'm atop the division right now. Why am I going to do something to hurt myself? If you want to take one of my guys, you got to give me more than you would have given me if I was 0-7 or if I was 1-5 or 1-6, excuse me. You would have to give more, or you would have to give probably a little less. But I'm winning now. You want my players, you got to give more. You got to give me somebody that can help me now and somebody that can help me in the future. If you're not willing to give up that, my team is in a position right now to challenge for a playoff spot. We may get in the playoff and we may lose the first game, but the point is to get in the playoffs first. In order to taste the playoffs, you got to get in there. You can't taste it if you're not in. So get me in the playoffs, and then we'll deal with things after that.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction to this, a lot of it, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Thank you, as always, for your participation. But coming up next, let's switch gears for a moment. The local professional hockey team opens training camp tomorrow. Well, technically it opened today, but they're on ice for practice for the first time tomorrow, which is what I consider the opening day of training camp. So the Predators are on ice for the first day of training camp tomorrow, and it is unlikely that one key player will be on the ice with them. We will discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We will get back into the Titans with Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick coming up at 5 o'clock. But for now, we're going to put the Titans on pause for a moment and talk about the other local professional team in town, the Nashville Predators. The Predators officially opened training camp today with physicals and team meetings, but they are on the ice for the first time this season starting tomorrow morning at Ford Ice Center Bellevue. The first group takes the ice at 8:45, the second group at 10:50 a.m., and the third group at 12:50 p.m. So if you are looking for something to do tomorrow, the Predators start practicing. All training camp practices, by the way, are at Ford Ice Center Bellevue. But there appears to be one player, Willie Donick, who will not be on the ice for the Nashville Predators when training camp, the on-ice portion of training camp, opens tomorrow. And that is Luke Evangelista, who is still without a contract. Evangelista is a restricted free agent, so he has really no leverage. But they have been unable to sign him. The opening of training camp serves as a soft deadline, so perhaps tomorrow morning we wake up and the Predators announce that they've agreed to a contract with Luke Evangelista. But at the moment, Evangelista, unsigned, and therefore won't be on the ice tomorrow for the Predators. What do you make of this situation? Because frankly, I'm surprised that Luke Evangelista is still unsigned. He is not the only restricted free agent in the NHL who is unsigned. Mason McTavish in Anaheim, I believe Luke Hughes in New Jersey, both restricted free agents, I should say, who are unsigned. But just, I would love your general thoughts on the situation with Luke Evangelista and what kind of contract he could be looking for that is taking him and the Predators so long to come to terms on.
You mentioned two other players, and I was listening to 32 Thoughts with Elliot Friedman, who will be joining our show in the coming weeks here as we get closer to the regular season. Mason Matavich and Luke Hughes are both phenom high first-round picks who I think are in negotiations for a pretty big, significant deal. Those are valuable guys. So I would put those two players in a different category as Luke Evangelista, who is a good, solid young player, but as you mentioned, probably not quite the leverage that those two other guys have. I think the Predators, as they look, first of all, I would not rule out what you said, that tonight or in the morning, right before the first practice, or maybe even sometime tomorrow, they come to terms. I don't think they're that far apart. So I'm optimistic that this is going to get done. There's nowhere for him to go. It's just a matter of how much he wants to sit out. And you hit the key word in my mind is leverage. The Predators, I think, you know, there's a little bit of a wild card with some of these young players. Could they fill for a couple of games if Luke Evangelista really wanted to take this to the mat? and who benefits the most. You know, the Predators have a chance to look for some young players. I'm not sure Evangelista, it would be the best thing for him to sit out for a long time. This is a critical year for him. He's got to show that he is a consistent. He's not coming off a great year, right? He had a solid finish to the year. He had a very significant injury that he tried to play through and missed some time. And I don't think they look at him as a vital guy that they're trying to lock up to a 7 or 8 year deal. He's not that type of guy at this point. I think I could see a 1, 2, or 3 year deal, depending on what he might bet on himself and take a 1 year deal. Either way, it seems like Evangelista needs to be out there. He doesn't need to be missing a lot of camp. And that's probably more leverage on the Predators' side than him.
Evangelista had 32 points, 10 goals, 22 assists in 68 games last season. The year before, he had the career-high 39 points, 16 goals, 23 assists in 80 games. And Luke Evangelista, at least to me, Willie, is not irreplaceable. He's a solid player, and I think the Predators would certainly miss him, but I don't see a lot hinging on his availability, if that makes sense.
Right. He's not a driver. Like, if you look at analytics, his analytics are steady. There's some things he does very, very well. He draws a lot of penalties. He's got a great hockey IQ. He's a good playmaker. But he's got weaknesses in his game as well. And so he's not one of those guys that is a huge needle mover. He's a good player on a good team. Does he have the ability, Adam, in your mind, to jump up to be like a 30-goal scorer or something like that? Probably not, right?
No.
He's a guy that's a 15, maybe a 20-goal scorer in a good year, who's a playmaker and helps a second power play. That's kind of how I see him. And so there's only a certain amount of value you have at this stage of your career. He's got to prove that he's better than that. And so maybe it's a one-year prove-it deal that ends up getting done. I can see a 2 or 3 year deal where the Predators maybe pay him a little less, but he gets the security of having certainty, guaranteed money for 3 years. And so I think that's where it would appear to me to be. Elliot Friedman on his podcast said it has been a tough negotiation. I forget the word he used. It didn't go into any detail at all, but he said it's been, like you said, it's a little surprising that it's gotten this far.
But I wonder why it's been so tough, because as I said before, I don't think Evangelista has any leverage, not just because he's a restricted free agent, but because
the only leverage he has is to hold out, and
right.
That is not
that's
good for
detrimental
Luke Evangelista.
To Luke
yes.
Evangelista. He had a down season last season. Now, that doesn't mean he should just take whatever contract the Predators give him and move on. But I don't think he's in any position to get a long-term deal or, you know, a significant raise. He's coming off of his entry-level contract, if I'm not mistaken. So he will get a significant raise from the rookie scale. But, you know, Mason McTavish, the center in Anaheim, or Luke Hughes, the defenseman in New Jersey, the brother of Quinn Hughes and Jack Hughes, you know, they have played key roles for their respective teams. They deserve large pay raises. Evangelista, at least to me, is not in that category. So it is surprising to me that we are at this point. If I recall correctly, Philip Tomasino was unsigned on the eve of training camp last year, and that morning he signed a one-year deal. And he was on the ice. He did get traded during the season. So my guess is that in sometime in the next couple of days, he's going to be under contract.
I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened before they actually take the ice for the first practice. I don't think this is some huge animosity kind of thing. I haven't talked to his agent. I don't know how his agent feels, but I feel like there is a mutual. The Predators want Luke Evangelista on the team this year. They quite frankly, they could really use him at this stage of his career. He's a little bit older than the pool of prospects they have coming up. But also, if I'm Luke Evangelista, I'm looking over my shoulder and I'm seeing Kimmel, Surin, would all of the guys that they have been grooming for the last two or three years, those guys in the next year or two are going to be in the mix. A couple of them will start to scratch the surface this year. So Evangelista's got to be cognizant of that. And like you said, what your only alternative is to sit out. So that's not a good thing. I think bet on yourself, maybe take the one-year deal would be the way to go.
You and I both intend on being at training camp tomorrow. We will get into a lot of what's going on with the Predators over the coming weeks before their season opener in, what, three-ish weeks? Less than a month away from the regular season opener for the Nashville Predators. What is your number one storyline for the Predators as they start training camp tomorrow?
I'll give you a huge storyline, and I think we would all agree. And this is goes in context with what is facing Evangelista in the do I hold out to get a little extra. What happened the last 2 years to this team? Bad starts. 5-10 2 years ago, they dug out of it. 0-5 last year, never dug out of it. Do you think there will be a huge emphasis on getting off to a good start and having day one training camp go well? I think absolutely. That will be what you hear from day one. And last year, remember, everything got fouled up. They had bad weather in Tampa. They had a couple of games that were compromised. They had the new guys coming in, and they got off to a terrible start. They are going to take extra measures, maybe push guys more in the training camp to avoid having what happened last year. So to me, that should be something that is considered by the Evangelista camp, right, of being there when it starts, because you don't want to be catching up and falling behind, because that group is going to be moving. They're going to be determined, because if they don't get off to a good start this year, we know what the reaction is going to be, right? There's already some people that are surprised that Andrew Brunet is back. There's people that are skeptical that they can be a bounce-back team. I mean, I'm talking about national people. I'm not talking even about the fans, but the fans would be in this category as well. So there's going to be, I think, even within the locker room, we've got to set the tone early on with ourselves, with our fans, and around the league that we're not slipping back, that we are a bounce-back team. I think that's going to be their mindset.
Quickly, one texter wants to know, can we explain why it seems like hockey has such a long time between draft and impact for players? It can't just be physicality, because we see people in the NFL and the NBA start to have an immediate impact after the draft. Just always wondered.
Well, these kids are drafted, everybody's 18, right? There's no range. In basketball, there are guys who are drafted when they're 20 or 21. And, you know, sometimes, you know, right around there, right? So they're already starting 2-3 years older than every single kid who's drafted. There might be an occasional kid who's 19 who gets passed over the first year he's eligible. So that's the biggest reason. In football, everybody, you can be 25 and come into the league, right? Hendon Hooker was, what, 25 years old, 7 years older than Brady Martin is right now. So that's the reason. And so unless you are a freak like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby, there are a couple each year that maybe are ready to jump in at 18 and really make an impact, but it's rare.
615-737-1025. By the way, Willie and I will be hosting the season debut of Preds Insiders tomorrow at 6 o'clock, right after DVD. It will be live. So Willie and I will stick around for an extra hour of hockey talk for all you Predators fans out there. That's tomorrow at 6 o'clock, right after this fine program. But coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans in college football with our friend Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan.